when I look at my client base today, of all the groups we've worked with, 70% of those groups did not exist 10 years ago when I graduated from Purdue. That goes to just tell you how much the industry is changing.
Hello, you're listening to the Purdue Agricultural Economics Podcast. I'm Ken Foster, faculty host for the podcast, and with me is Shelby Whitaker, one of the student co-hosts for the Purdue Agricultural Economics Podcast. And Shelby, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Dr. Foster?
I'm doing great. Hey, you know, I know by the time this podcast goes live, it'll be over, but this is Ag Week at Purdue. It's super exciting. And I don't know if you want to, you know, tell our listeners a little bit about Ag Week and what it's about.
Yeah, so Ag Week is 1 week during the school year in April where all of the different option clubs come together to promote agriculture. So there's a bunch of different activities to do. There's Burger Bash where they'll give out free burgers. Today we're recording on a Thursday, so they're packing like hunger packs. And yeah, so hoping to set a record again for as many packs as they did last year.
Yeah, I think I saw a goal of 65,000 meals that they're planning to pack for folks in our community. And to me, as a professor, what's even doubly exciting is that this is all driven by students. And these students aren't paid to do this. This is all volunteer. And they're super enthusiastic about sharing with the rest of the campus about agriculture and food, and as well as giving back to the community. So it's an awesome week. And for our listeners out there, it happens every year in early April. So if you happen to be back around Purdue campus, check it out and participate. So, hey, Shelby, do you want to introduce our guest for this podcast?
Yeah, and it's definitely fitting because our guest is one of the founders of Ag Week. So I'll go ahead and tell you a little bit about Travis Martin. Travis Martin graduated from Purdue with a bachelor's in agribusiness management in 2014. During his time at Purdue, he was involved in Old Masters, Mortar Board, a founding member of Purdue Ag Week Task Force, Gimlet Honorary, Ag Ambassadors, and more. Travis was also recently invited back to campus as a 2024 Rising Professional, and currently he works as the founder and owner of Imagine Content and Consulting, and was previously the creator of AFA's Magnetic Ag Newsletter. So welcome, Travis. We're glad to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Shelby. Thanks, Dr. Foster. Glad to be here.
So can you share a little bit with us about your journey from obtaining a Purdue Ag degree to now leading and owning your own content and consulting company?
I'd love to. So it's fun to hear about Purdue Ag Week going on this week. And I think Shelby, right, it's kind of timely, I guess, that we're having this conversation today. But yeah, my journey has been through a few different parts of the industry, but all within the ag industry. So when I graduated in 2014, I came out of school and went to what would have been legacy Dow AgriSciences before Corteva. So that might age me a little bit. And I was in their crop protection business. So a pretty traditional commercial sales and marketing role. From there, I actually went back. My ag connection would be in commercial pork production. So I went to my swine roots and moved over to Elanco Animal Health for several years and worked in their U.S. pork business. And so I kind of had these first 5-6 years of my career that were pretty squarely in kind of corporate America, if you will, right? But in the ag space. And then I pivoted kind of more into the ag tech world. And so my last role with Elanco, I had been working with data and some data products, and it naturally got me very interested in ag tech right when that scene was really burgeoning. So moved over there where I led marketing for a few different startups before eventually it kind of rolled into this thing that is what I call Imagine Content Consulting. And essentially what we're doing is we support marketing efforts for a wide variety of different companies in the industry. So we work with large corporate input suppliers, manufacturers, all the way down to the same ag tech startups I used to work for full time. And yeah, we work with them on, you know, marketing that relates to sales enablement. So product collateral or, you know, services information about what they sell and do, all the way through to more what they call top of funnel content. So when you see a blog or a resource center on a company's website, we'll do a lot of the work around that content production, interviewing folks, doing the design or video asset creation for anything like that. So what's neat today is the company, we've worked with over 25 brands in the industry, all in different parts, which keeps it interesting and fun and keeps me on my toes and kind of keeps me in the know of all the different parts of the industry. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've got a team of 12 and it continues, you know, I think back to my days at Purdue and just a lot of the skills that I learned there, both in and out of the classroom, I think I apply pretty much daily these days.
That's great. Did you ever think you wanted to become an entrepreneur when you were in college, or did this kind of, you stumbled upon it and you really enjoy it now? Because this isn't your first company. Obviously you did the newsletter that now AFA owns.
Yeah, no, I think there's two things of that, right? I grew up in I guess on my dad's side, I grew up in a farm family, right? Which is naturally pretty entrepreneurial in and of itself. On my mom's side, you know, she grew up in the town just north of where I grew up. And my grandpa on that side owned an HVAC company. So I kind of don't know if I really know anything different, right, than people in my family who own their own companies. And then on the flip side, I think in both these instances, whether it's what I do now or even when we started the newsletter before we sold it to AFA, I kind of just, I think, make things that don't exist or make things that I want that don't exist, if that makes sense. And then if I'm lucky, it resonates with others. So the newsletter was a great example of me just wishing there was a newsletter kind of like Magnetic that wasn't there. And so I started it. And then with the business, I was noticing when I worked full-time for others that I wish there had been, you know, a content agency of sorts that could provide the services that my team now provides to companies. So I think that, you know, just fulfilling a need that I was kind of seeing in the industry naturally led me to, I guess, you know, being an entrepreneur.
Travis, some of our listeners may also recognize that you were a finalist for AFA's Bridge Builder Award. And I guess before I move on, I should clarify for our listeners, AFA stands for Ag Futures of America. And if you're listening out there and you don't know what we're talking about, you need to go back. Earlier this semester, we did a podcast on AFA and you can find out more about AFA there. But Travis, can you tell us about your first company, Magnetic Ag, and what prompted the shift in ownership and that transition?
Yeah. So Magnetic Ag, you know, it was a great stepping stone maybe into entrepreneurship. I still had a full-time role when I started that because it was just simply, honestly, a twice a week newsletter. It was not anything huge or enormous, but what we found when we started it was it kind of started to resonate, right? So it was a twice weekly newsletter. It kind of curated all these ag news sources to kind of get the top stories of the week. And then essentially we would regurgitate them into, you know, kind of very relatable, sometimes humorous, sometimes not, you know, content that just was a little bit more digestible maybe than traditional ag media. So it was kind of just providing a different media product than what existed in the industry. You know, I got to a spot where it got big. And while it was doing that, I was also growing the content business. And just it became a thing where I thought this needed a longer term home. And honestly, just had lots of conversations in the industry. And when having the opportunity to talk with Mark Stewart at AFA, we just saw a lot of opportunities to where it could serve the AFA mission, right? I mean, a predominant piece of that, you know, 12,000 person audience were people under the age of 30, you know, people working in agribusiness, if not still in college. And it looked like between, you know, having job opportunities, just the whole point of providing insights into what was going on in the industry, a small, you know, slivers of professional development that we would put into that, it really aligned with the AFA mission. And so it was a pretty natural transition. They continue it today. They just kind of did a recent rebrand on it. But I think it serves what they're doing really well in that audience. And honestly, was a lot of probably the same audience I was trying to serve when I had started it 2 years prior.
So can I just, you know, interject another question here that follows up? And we're sitting here curating the Purdue Agricultural Economics podcast, and we're always looking for ways that we can expand our listenership or be unique. I know from talking to our students here at Purdue that a number of them have blogs and newsletters and podcasts and other ways that they're trying to communicate with the community at large about food and agriculture. Do you have any advice for us, for them, about, you know, how to be successful? Because, you know, there's a lot of action going on out there and you managed to make it work.
Yeah, it's a good question. I will say this. I don't know if I have necessarily good advice because as you guys well know, right, how people consume content changes constantly. The types of channels or forums that you can consume it or find it is always, you know, ebbing and flowing, and there's new things a lot. One thing I will say, though, is by me starting Magnetic, you know, back in 2020, which really wasn't that long ago, it kind of put my voice on a larger scale, right? I was starting to build an audience. And while I was never, my name wasn't really on the newsletter other than just being like the creator, that ability to build something in public has been invaluable to my career. I mean, people now know what I'm capable of. And that wasn't even really my full-time job, right? So it was just kind of this concept of, hey, Travis knows how to build trust with an audience. He knows how to build an audience. He understands how people in our industry think. Also, right, with that newsletter, we came at it with a slightly different angle of how we delivered it, whether it was the tone of voice or, you know, the different types of media we made sure to kind of promote. And so being able to find and kind of elbow your way into an angle or a niche, you know, I think those are all things where, because I was doing it in public, it's really helped my career. So I would say to those folks who are doing it, just keep doing it. You know, I think sometimes people get really focused on a number, like an audience number or a listener number or whatever that is. That's really not the point. I think the point is to get the reps in, to get the skills to build. And so that's one thing I think I'm just so glad I stumbled into that opportunity and kept running with it when I did.
And I think with both of kind of your opportunities to be able to create these companies, I'm sure you've faced some challenges and things like that along the way. Can you dive into some of those challenges and how you were able to overcome those?
Yeah, there's always challenges. You know, there's very technical challenges, right? So things like setting up payroll, very simple, right? But if you've not done it before and it's not truly part of your skill set, it's not what the core of your company is. Those are things you just have to learn to do. So, you know, there's obviously the logistics behind just getting a business up and running and functioning. I'd say another piece is finding talent and hiring is a challenge. There are lots of people, but you know, when you're building something and you're trying to focus specifically on serving an audience, or in Magnetic's case, right, it was finding writers that could kind of capture the tone of voice we wanted and being able to re-deliver Ag News in that way. That's not easy, because the reason Magnetic was different was because we were writing different than every other ag media publication. So I couldn't go just find ag writers working for those groups. So I think those would definitely be the two that come to mind. And to the hiring piece, as I think about my business today, it continues to be a challenge. And mostly because things change so fast in this particular type of business that I'm in. So the biggest thing I try to do is try to find people that are lifelong learners who enjoy kind of moving as the industry moves, helping our companies, our clients better understand how, whether it be farmers, folks in ag retail, ranchers, whoever, how are they consuming content and how can we pivot someone's content strategy to align with that, to expand their reach? Those are things where I'd say those will always be challenges, right? Because they are always changing.
It's really cool, Travis, to hear you talk about, you know, being innovative and staying, you know, up to date on things and being nimble, really. But also you mentioned trust. And I think that, you know, that combination is really important. I wonder if you could just kind of walk us through the process of how Imagine Content and Consulting works with its partners and clients to enhance their content strategies. Maybe just kind of walk us through a day in the life of the company.
I would say, just to kind of back up, really when we start working with someone or figuring out if there's an opportunity to work together, my job is to ultimately understand what's kind of their go-to-market strategy. And then more importantly, what are kind of like the key messages and value proposition of particular products or services that company is selling, right? So once we have a really good understanding of that, it helps us kind of move to helping them build a content strategy, right? So you can better understand who are the target personas, who are maybe more importantly, the buyer personas, but who's also involved in the entire sales cycle. You start to better understand who the decision makers are. And then you kind of go to the very classic in marketing discussion of like, what does the funnel look like? How do people find you at the top of that funnel? What's their experience in terms of as they learn more about you over time in a variety of mediums, right? It's not just content, but it's when they're at trade shows or, you know, any other sort of way that they hear about your company, and then all the way down to the kind of that bottom of the funnel. So when someone is close to making a buying decision, what are those last things that they're evaluating, and how are you really making, you know, your product or service extremely well understood? And then the kind of the key piece of that is what we're calling, right, sales enablement today. So that idea of like, what are you arming the commercial unit, the sales force with that makes their job easier? Because at the end of the day, one piece that I like to think that maybe makes my business a little bit different than a traditional marketing agency is because we're so focused on content, we really try to tie it back to ROI. And that's not just saying, hey, we got more traffic to your website, but it's saying, oh, no, we can actually see because of these efforts, we drew more leads, or we actually saw an uptick in particular sales for, you know, X, Y, and Z. That way they actually know by working with us, like they are getting their money's worth, which I think is important in any business, right? So that's really, I think the core of it is we start at kind of that strategic level. And then once that strategy has been decided, the client company is bought in, we've kind of really refined it, then the nice part is my team can help them actually execute on the strategy. So whether it's producing the content, the design, the video, the assets, and then helping them with the distribution of it as needed, that kind of allows us to help them again, kind of that nice angle of working on the strategy and then actually executing on it. And that's mostly what our engagements look like with folks.
That's great. So I guess my next question is, what are some pressing issues that are currently facing some of these agribusiness and ag tech startups in terms of that content marketing or their digital presence?
Yeah, there's a lot, and it depends on right what niche, what part of the industry you go into. I would say this is kind of generic, but I think it applies to everyone. There's no lack of digital content, right, in the world today. So finding a way to cut through the noise and position yourself. And I'll go back to what Dr. Foster said about like in a very trusting way, not just putting content out there because it's clickbait or because you're taking a really hard stance, right? And you're just trying to make yourself heard. It gets harder and harder. And on top of that, you know, if we talk anything about the ability for people to use, you know, ChatGPT or any generative AI tool, that's only flooded the market with more typically subpar content. So I would say that's a constant challenge, regardless of what type of content you're producing, where it lives, and how you're distributing it to the audience. And so we try to use AI tools to help us, but they're not the core of the business. And if anything, what we're learning, right, more and more, and back to the idea of trust, is that people need to, in content, see expertise, authority, and trustfulness. And so that actually means you need to have your brand, your team more in your content than ever. You need to have agronomists on the podcast. You need to have the vet, you know, be part of your social media strategy. You need to see faces. You need to understand who your customers really are. And so I think that's one thing that, back to the idea of like being a lifelong learner and just trying to stay ahead of the curve, is how can we utilize AI tools to make us more efficient? But at the same time, how do we position ourselves against a flood of content that some of those AI tools are being used for to really make the content strategy come to life and be valuable?
So Travis, you've talked quite a bit about how dynamic, you know, your business is and the business of your client is. Maybe if we could drill down a little bit more specific, what are some of the current trends that you see evolving in the ag marketing space?
Yeah, you know, I would say it's kind of some of the basics I think are coming back around because there has been such a flood of new technologies and channels. So, you know, I think if you had asked me 10 years ago when I was graduating Purdue, right, there was a lot of people that were investing in things like social media, which is not going anywhere, right? But I think what you have found over time, if you're, you know, a B2B brand and you're trying to sell to farmers or whoever else in the ag value chain, it's hard to get yourself known that way anymore. And so I think you come back around to like super basic things like extremely valuable email, right? And that kind of goes to my core of like magnetic, you know, and if you can get in an email inbox and you can earn your spot or like, you know, really earn the real estate you take up in someone's inbox and they look forward to getting an email from you because you're providing that much value, you're doing it really right. And so I think that's something we try to implement a lot. And, you know, we have worked with a lot of brands on a lot of email. We've sent a lot of email. So we kind of can better understand what people are looking for and again, how to stand out. The other thing I'd say is, you know, I think, you know, we've obviously gone through a global pandemic since I left Purdue. And so we went from this shift of, you know, everything was in person to nothing was in person. And now we're kind of coming back around, or right, there's a lot of this hybrid approach to things. I think in our industry in particular, in-person matters maybe more than other industries, right? And if you think about how a farmer purchases, almost everything is at the farm gate. You know, they're not necessarily going to do it through e-commerce or, you know, through a platform. Now there might be, you know, the sales rep and you might order through the app of that ag retailer, for example. But at the end of the day, like you have the relationship in person with that. So back to the marketing tactics, I think a lot of it is we work on a lot of those sales enablement materials, things that are used in person, whether it's like a one pager that has, you know, some calculations on it. You can walk through a dairy ration to better understand how it's going to impact an operation at scale, to different sorts of calculators and other things like that. That I think that in-person kind of content asset creation is another big thing I think we're seeing come back around, especially since COVID.
So something you said brought up a thought in my mind. I mean, I have my own little side hustle And not that many years ago, social media was huge with respect to, you know, getting recognized, building client base and things like that. How do you decide when to sunset an effort in this space?
It's tough. Social media is tough. And we don't, you know, transparently, my team doesn't do a lot with social media. Now, a lot of the stuff we create ends up repurposed on social media. So we touch it kind of from that angle. The biggest lesson I think I've had, you know, is when you're on social media, it's a rented audience, right? You don't own the audience. And the algorithm can change every month if the company decides to change it. And all of a sudden, the reach you once had is no longer. That, I think, is why I become super bullish on converting people out of a channel like that onto an email list or some other mechanism to where you have a little bit more ownership of that. It's hard to say, right? Because I would tell a B2B brand, like, you're always going to want to own, you know, your channels, your social channels. Like, you're going to want to have something going there in the background. I think it's just a matter of, can you rely that they're actually going to provide any sort of true ROI? Is it worth investing a lot of money on a social media strategy? You know, when you're scrolling on Instagram, you're not just competing with other ag B2B brands. You're competing with someone's grandma and, you know, the Purdue basketball team. So, you know, it's just not a space, I think, where...
Boiler up.
Exactly. You know, I think me as Travis Martin, I'm much more interested in watching the reels of us beating Tennessee last weekend than I am going down a whole pipe dream on some new fertilizer that's out. So I just think that's kind of, as I think about it from that B2B space, where would I be spending time and money? I don't think social is where that's going to be.
I think those are great thoughts that not a lot of people kind of realize, especially as they're entering into the industry. Like you said, a lot of people want to go social media full force, and that may not always be the right option or thing to do. So besides this kind of advancement of technology, is there any other ways that the industry has sort of changed or that you've seen or anything that you are hoping and expecting to happen?
Yeah, it's definitely changing. I think I talked about this, Shelby, when I was back on campus last month during Rising Professionals. But when I look at my client base today, of all the groups we've worked with, 70% of those groups did not exist 10 years ago when I graduated from Purdue. So I think that goes to just tell you like how much the industry is changing. And I would even say this, it's not even so much that they're all ag tech startups that are net new from 2014. Some of them are evolutions of companies that just existed, right? And my first full-time job with Dow is a great example. Dow, right, is now Corteva, which is a multitude of different groups. And if you look even further into what kind of Corteva is today, you start to see acquisitions of ag tech startups and other things. So it molds and melds and changes. I would just say this is, as new technology comes or as there's new spinoffs and things like that, you know, the buying journey for a farmer, and I'm just talking about farmers, not the other folks in the value chain that we work with and clients sell to, but you know, that hasn't changed a lot. But I think the thing we're on the precipice of and everyone talks right about is this average age of a farmer. And at what point do transitions happen? At what point is that average age going to come down? I mean, I don't know when that is. And I don't typically try to predict things like that. But I would just say, from a marketing angle, if we're working with these brands, I think it's time to almost think about, how do you split your strategy to think about what the next generation, how their buying patterns are going to look, how they're going to want to buy, how they're going to be thinking about buying, how they're going to build relationships differently than maybe, you know, relationships have been built from the older generation. I think that's a worthy thing because we're definitely getting closer. I don't know when the pendulum's really going to swing, but it's something I think that people need to be thinking about.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we've been talking about farmers, age of farmers, since I was a student 40 years ago at Purdue. So maybe it just means farming is such a great occupation. Nobody ever stops farming. I can't quite figure that out. But yeah, you're probably right. It's probably going to turn. But yeah, sometimes I just wonder about that. Looking back on your time at Purdue, we have a number of student listeners to the podcast. And maybe you could impart to them what experiences and organizations you were involved in here at Purdue that you feel set you up for your success in your career today?
Yeah, there's so many. So it's hard to pinpoint just a few. I would say, you know, as I look back at all those different experiences, I think there was things I took from all of them. You know, one, again, just to focus on the timeliness of it, I think Purdue Ag Week is unique and was a unique experience for me because it was really the only one where it was, I was part of the team that went through the process of creating it, right? So the mere process of going through the SAO office and, you know, getting a charter and doing all the things to get something off the ground and just building something from scratch, I think is something super applicable to what I do today. Not only in just the company, but like getting a content strategy off the ground for any new company we start to work with. The other thing that I was very lucky with AgWeek was I was a sophomore when it started. So I actually went through the first three AgWeeks and got to see kind of the quick evolution of how it changed, how we had to think about growing it, you know, what was our plan for it to be like 10 years down the road. So I would just say like that experience and of all just in terms of building something was huge for me. The other thing I'd say is, you know, whether it was Ag Ambassadors or, you know, Mortarboard, I mean, you could name any of them, but I would say in Old Masters as well, like interacting with alumni, people from different backgrounds, just this whole concept of like working with people from different environments, like that's constantly something I'm doing. And so I think back to like what Purdue gave me, you know, I grew up in Carroll County, Indiana. I graduated with 80 kids in my high school, which isn't different from a lot of other kids at Purdue and the College of Ag, but that's a big shift, right? And so I think one of the best things I did, obviously, was get involved in my college, which is the industry and the thing I grew up in. It's what I continue to do today. But then also getting involved outside of it and being at the broader university level was huge for me. Lots of things in the classroom obviously still apply to me today. But a lot of those things I did outside the classroom not only prepared me for a career in what we're doing, but also is, you know, how I met my wife, for example. So those things are important too. So just important to remember how this entire experience shapes you and the impact it's going to have on you.
And you were back on campus recently as a part of the Rising Professionals program. And I guess for some of our listeners who maybe been affiliated with Purdue for a while, you'll know the Old Masters program and the Rising Professionals program is a way to bring back younger alumni to impart their experiences to our students. But during that time back, what was that like for you? And was there anything at Purdue that surprised you in the time that you've been away?
One thing I'll say is, right, I'm just down the road in Indy. So we get back once or twice a year for a sporting event, but very, very rarely do I walk actual, you know, the academic campus. And so one, just the growth is crazy. I had the opportunity to sit with former Dean Ackridge at dinner one night, and he was just explaining to me all the changes, which is incredible. Obviously, physically, the change of campus has been pretty crazy. But the cool thing is it's kind of stayed the same, I would say, which is a really cool feeling. You know, Shelby was one of my hosts while I was there, and like her and the rest of my host group, I felt oddly like I was just back 10 years ago because the good nature of the students, how smart they are, the cool stuff that they're doing, I kind of felt like, oh yeah, this is like, you're just back at home in a way. So I think that was super neat. And I would say even like some of the experiences that I had that weekend, it brings back a lot of awesome memories, but also just a lot of pride in Purdue and Purdue agriculture, because I mean, obviously I'm biased, but it just feels like it's the most premier place. If you're going to go to college, I don't know why you would look elsewhere. So yeah, no, it was a super, super special weekend. I had a blast.
Hey, Travis, it's been great talking to you. And I just want you to know, we're super proud of you back here at Purdue and everything that you have accomplished and that you're going to accomplish. We're looking forward to your future success.
Hey, well, thank you. And I would go without saying I owe so much to Purdue and Purdue Ag Econ and Purdue Agriculture to get me here as well.
Hey, folks, you've been listening to the Purdue Agricultural Economics Podcast. You can visit the department at www.agecon.purdue.edu. You can follow us on Facebook and like us on X. So have a great day.